listening to the only daily talk show in North America covering the world of football. This is World Football Daily.
Yes, 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 yes! It hits the back of the net! Oh my goodness me!
The world's game.
Oh, you're beautiful! What a head, son! What a head!
Our religion.
Brilliant goal! What an equalizer!
Our passion.
Go, go, USA! Oh, it's incredible! You could not write a script like this!
World Football Daily serves up the best football talk 5 days a week.
Oh! You will never, ever see a game quite like this! Unbelievable!
Can Bayern add another piece of silverware to their already bulging trophy cabinet? They start their World Club Cup Championship against Chinese side Gangwon Evergreen, managed by Mr. Lippi, the only manager to have both an Asian and UEFA Champions League title to his record. AVB's gone, but he's got a cool £4 million payout out of it from Tottenham to add to his £12 million payout from Chelsea. I wonder if getting sacked is really all that bad for football managers. And another Italian match-fixing scandal kicks off with a bang as Gennaro Gattuso sees his house raided yesterday as investigators look into matches that involve AC Milan, Juventus and Inter. We'll be talking about that on the show a little later on. Welcome to Tuesday's edition of World Football Daily. I'm Oliver the Juice Wilson, bringing you the news and the many views from around the world of football. Here talking all things Italian football today. Later on, we'll be chatting with Goal.com's very own Giancarlo Garganessi. Lovely chap. Haven't spoken to him in a while. And of course, Rafa will be joining me as well. There's plenty to talk about. Milan holding on for a 2-2 draw against Roma in the San Siro last night. I think at the beginning of the season, Milan fans might have been disappointed, but I tell you what, we are elated with a point against Roma at this point in time. Before we get into all things super serious, as we look ahead to kind of the festive season, it's time to throw a little bit of like fun and interesting stuff into World Football Daily. And if anybody has seen Bayern Munich taking on Bayern Munich's basketball team in a little kind of B-win bet kind of advertisement on YouTube, definitely have a look. We'll have the link on our Twitter page and, of course, on Facebook as well. But Bayern Munich get invited down to the basketball court where Bayern Munich's basketball team play. And Thomas Müller, Dante, I think Javi Martinez is in there as well. They all start kind of getting involved, shooting a few hoops and having a laugh. And then Javi Martinez, basically the Bayern boys, do a kind of a little bit of keepy up as they work towards the basket. It gets flicked up. Javi Martinez takes the ball in the air, dunks the football home. Absolutely fantastic skills from the Spanish defensive midfielder, and definitely worth checking out. So I want to pose a question to you guys today, though. If you could see one footballer playing one other sport, what would it be? If you could see one footballer playing one other sport, what would it like to be? Would you like to see, for instance, Cristiano Ronaldo deking his way down the ice hockey rink? Because you can imagine his speed would probably translate pretty nicely into ice hockey as he raced away down the rink. Would you like to see maybe Lionel Messi playing that Muggsy Bogues almost role at point guard in the NBA? Would you like to see somebody like, I guess somebody from the old days, like Gary Pallister, big strong centre-back, playing up on the line or something like that in American football? Let us know. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter, 310-909-8483 is the rant line, and of course the Facebook page as well. Which footballer would you like to see the most playing a different sport? I want to talk about Mario Balotelli's boots from last night a little later on as well. I mean, the guy's just, the ego on this guy, it's just fantastic. We'll be talking about that in just a moment. But we do have our guest ready and waiting for us to join us today on World Football Daily to talk a little bit about Serie A. Of course, we had Milan against Roma last night. We'll be breaking that down a little bit. And we'll be getting into the Champions League and a little bit the Europa League draws as well for Juve, Napoli, Lazio, Fiorentina, And of course, AC Milan, the only Italian club left in the Champions League. And that's why we've got an ideal man to do that for with us today. Carlo Garganessi from Goal.com joins us here on WFD. Carlo, mate, it's a pleasure to have you back on the show, man. How are you doing? How you been?
Yeah, I'm doing good, Ollie. How are you?
I'm very well, man. Very well indeed. Quite relieved to see Milan at least picking up a point against Roma. Well, that's kind of become the norm for Roma at the moment, to be only grabbing one when maybe three was in their grasp.
Yeah, Roma can't stop drawing really at the moment since Totti was out injured, although he did come back against Milan. They've been struggling really to score, and they've been struggling to finish teams off. So it wasn't all that surprising that we saw a draw against Milan, and Milan have actually been drawing a lot themselves recently. So I think it was quite predictable, but it was a great game, loads of chances, you know, lots of action. So it was a great game to watch.
Before we talk about Roma for a moment, I just want to ask you, because we spoke about Kaká returning to AC Milan and how it was a big lift, kind of at least emotionally around the club. But his performances, they haven't been spectacular, but it's not been disappointing either. He's come in and he's been doing a pretty decent job at the moment. Is that how you rate it, Carlo?
Yeah, actually, I think he's surprised quite a few people. I actually think he's been quite good. I mean, you'd think for a 31-year-old that he'd be, you know, starting to lose his pace and that acceleration that Kaká was so famous for, you know, around, well, in the peak of his first Milan spell, you know, 2006-2007. You know, he's shown flashes that, obviously, he's never going to get back to those levels. But I mean, the Milan versus Celtic game in Scotland, he was absolutely outstanding in that match. And you know, he's been one of Milan's better players during this kind of crisis. So you know, that does give Milan a little bit of hope going into the new year. That if Kaká and Balotelli can start firing, that you know they can improve in 2014.
You mentioned they've been drawing a lot recently and they've not lost in their last five games now, Milan. Do you get the feeling that they have slightly turned a corner? You mentioned, called it a crisis there of sorts. I mean, has it been a crisis at the moment? And have they started to the recovery process, the similar time that we saw last season as well?
I think we'll have to see. I mean, obviously the derby is coming up this weekend. It's the last game before Christmas. So if Milan can beat Inter, then that'll put them into, you know, really boost morale going into the new year. And then, you know, there is the chance that they can turn the corner. I wouldn't say so yet. I mean, they've been drawing so many games. They're 10th in Serie A. They're way off the pace. And there's still doubts over the future of Allegri. And they only just scraped through in the Champions League as well against a, you know, quite an average Ajax side. So I wouldn't say they're through the crisis. I would say that, you know, things are still, you know, things are not looking great in Milan really. But you know, the January transfer window is coming up. Adil Rami is coming in. So is Kazuki Honda, although he's ineligible for the Champions League. If they can get a couple more faces in, I think it looks like D'Ambrosio of Torino could be joining in January. Then, you know, hopefully they can really get out of this crisis.
Well, I guess we hope they can get out of it on the pitch. Off the pitch, there might be more stirring because Gazzetta dello Sport reporting today that a number of AC Milan matches involved in the ongoing match-fixing scandal that just seems to be continuous throughout Italian football. And Gattuso as well, Gennaro Gattuso, having his house raided by the police. I mean, will there be fears for Milan fans? And hearing as well that Juventus and Inter could all be involved in games that are being investigated for match-fixing. I mean, this is worrying again for Italian football, and with it being the top clubs again potentially involved.
I wouldn't really want to comment on that just now. It's quite early into these investigations, and what always happens when a new scandal comes about is that the media goes crazy and they put out a lot of information, most of it which isn't particularly accurate, and a lot of it is, you know, they have their sources and they don't really know what's going on. And we've seen that with a lot of scandals in the past where, you know, even Calciopoli, which for all that happened was an absolute farce, and it was the Gazzetta who at the start of the Calciopoli scandal put out so much stuff, defamatory stuff. So I wouldn't want to comment on it just yet. Obviously, it's not good for Italian football. It's the last thing you want to see, you know, another scandal. But, you know, I think we just need to see how this one plays out before we start, you know, accusing anyone of doing wrong.
Give it a little more time before, and to some of the realistic facts rather than the fantastical Italian press giving us what we want to hear.
Exactly,
rather than what the truth is. Sure thing, Carlo. Elsewhere, back on the pitch then for Roma. You know, we've spoken about the number of draws that they've had recently. Should Roma fans start to worry that they are going to be losing touch on a Juventus side that are just racing away with it? We've been surprised by how well Roma have started, but since they set the bar so high with those first 10 wins, should we be disappointed that they aren't maintaining that?
It was always going to be hard to maintain it. I mean, they won, what was it, 10 games in succession at the start of the season, which was just unbelievable when you look at the summer transfer market and the players they let go, and all the doom and gloom that surrounded the start of the season. New coach, I mean, they were fantastic, and like I said before, I think Totti's injury did hurt them offensively. But they're still doing great. They're still second in the league. They're still unbeaten. Yes, they've fallen a little bit behind Juventus. And to be honest with you, Juventus could almost have one hand on the Scudetto in the next two games, because if they win the next two matches, the second of which is against Roma in Turin, then they will have pulled at least 8 points clear of second place. So yeah, Roma, you know, that is going to be a big, big game for Roma. If they do actually want to really challenge for the Scudetto, then they cannot lose that game. So yeah, a little bit to worry about. But I think the bigger picture is that the Roma are looking very good still for a Champions League spot. And if they achieve that at the end of the season, then they'll be delighted.
Is Rudy Garcia being aggressive enough in these games that they've drawn, do you think? Is there almost, it was touched on during the commentary on the Milan game last night, that maybe they're being slightly negative in order to preserve this unbeaten run that they're on at the moment? Do you get that feeling at all? Or is this just a team's just maybe slightly working out Roma a little bit as well, and they're just maybe not as good as a 10-game win streak at the beginning of the season would suggest?
I'm not sure if there's an obsession over this unbeaten run. What I would say is, and what I'd agree with you with, is that obviously Rudy Garcia plays a 4-3-3, and there have been quite a few occasions this season that where he's played midfielders in the outside attacker roles. I mean, Florenzi played as the right attacker and has done for most of the season so far, although he didn't start the game against Milan. And there's even been other games where he's played two midfielders in kind of the outside attacker roles up front. So in that sense, I think Rudy Garcia really does value forwards who will do the defensive side of the game, which obviously is very important, but also sometimes it can take a little bit away from a team's attack. So I think there is a balance that maybe Rudy Garcia does need to look at, because the goals undoubtedly have started to dry up in recent matches.
Now, Allegri was obviously under pressure after last season's poor start for AC Milan, and you could feel that pressure obviously growing again. But the five-game unbeaten run at the moment, and the fact that they are the only Italian side left in the Champions League this year, has that saved Allegri's job, do you think, for maybe another season at least?
It's definitely given him some breathing space. I mean, at the end of the day, I can't see him staying at Milan. I can't see him being at Milan next season. But yeah, you'd think that he'll still be around when the Atletico Madrid game comes along in February.
What will the expectations be for that Atletico Madrid game at the moment? Will people be looking at and seeing Atletico riding so high in Spain, Milan struggling in Serie A, and just be going, well, if it comes to an end, at least it's coming to an end against a side like Atletico?
Well, I think if Milan played against Atletico Madrid tomorrow, I think it would be very, very difficult to see Milan winning the game, because Atletico are doing fantastic in La Liga, albeit not the strongest league in the world in terms of depth, but they're doing fantastic. I mean, they're challenging Real Madrid and Barcelona, so you know that says it all. And they've got some great players in their team: Diego Costa, David Villa, Koke. I mean, just name them. There's so many. One thing I would say about Atletico Madrid is they don't have the deepest squad in the world. So when February comes along, you know, if they have a couple of injuries or, you know, tiredness and fatigue might start to creep in, that does give Milan a little bit of a hope. And also, you know, when any Champions League draw is made for the last 16, there's always 2 months between the draw and the actual matches, and a lot can change in those 2 months. And even though Milan are struggling at the moment, you'd like to think that in 2 months' time they will have improved. The January signings, I mean, Adil Rami, for one, will be eligible for the Champions League. He, you know, not the best player in the world, but he will improve their defence. And if they can get a couple of other new players in as well. And also, on top of that, you just never can write off Milan in the Champions League, even though they haven't, you know, since they won it in 2007, I don't think they've been past the quarterfinals. They're still, you know, when that Champions League anthem plays, you still get that feeling with Milan that they can always pull something off. And they do have match winners like Balotelli, even Kaká. But, you know, I wouldn't write Milan off, basically.
I'm not going to be doing it just yet, but if things don't change soon, I think it would be a safer bet if you're having a flutter before the game. The reaction to Napoli and Juventus' departure, Carlo, from the Champions League, especially Juventus in such peculiar circumstances, what's that been like from the Italian press and the fans around those clubs?
Well, I think with Napoli, I don't think you can criticise them at all. I mean, they got 12 points from the group of death, the first team ever to go out in a group stage in which two teams qualify. The first team ever to go out after getting 12 points. I mean, they obtained more points than any other team that finished second in their group. They earned more points than a couple of group winners. So I think that just says it all. They played a fantastic group stage, really. You can't really fault them. And played great football. They were just really, really unlucky. I don't think there's nothing else you can really say about Napoli. And I think their fans acknowledged that at the end of the Arsenal game. They gave them a standing ovation as they left the pitch. They're just real, really, really unlucky. And I think the same goes in Serie A as well for Napoli's form. I mean, they've been great this season. So they still find themselves 8 points off the top of the table. As with Juventus, I mean, again, they lost to Galatasaray, and the game should never have been played. It was absolutely scandalous. I mean, a Sunday league pub match wouldn't have been played in those conditions. You know, it should never have gone ahead. So, I mean, they were unlucky as well. But having said that, they should never have been in a position where they needed to get a draw. I mean, if you go earlier on into the group stages, if you're not beating Copenhagen away from home, if you're not beating Galatasaray, and this is a poor Galatasaray side. They qualified with a -6 goal difference, and they're not particularly doing very well in Turkey either. This is a poor Galatasaray side. If you can't beat them at home, then they're really you can't really blame it all on the weather.
Was there a thought that maybe the game should have just continued on that Tuesday night rather than being replayed on the Wednesday, or the extra time being played on the Wednesday? Because it seemed when we were watching it that the ball was still rolling reasonably well on that surface at that point, and there were an option to kind of pause the game, clear the lines, and then get the game back underway again. They have an orange ball for a reason. Has that been a feeling in Italy as well?
It's hard to say. I think it was pretty much, I think everyone acknowledges it was pretty much unplayable on both days, really. It was probably on the Tuesday, like you're saying, that the ball was moving better, but it was dangerous, you know, and you need to take the safety of the players into account as well. So, you know, and it was getting late. Turkey's two hours ahead as well, so that needed to be taken into account. The match shouldn't have been played. The problem was that the Champions League draw was on the Monday, So unless they played the game the following day, it was going to cause all kinds of chaos with the Champions League draw. If the game hadn't been played by then. So there was that taken account. No, I don't think anyone really knows the actual truth on whether Juventus wanted to play the game or not. Roberto Mancini seemed to suggest at the end of the game, the Galatasaray coach, that he was happy for the game to be cancelled, and the Juventus wanted to play the game. So it's hard to say that there are some people who think that Juventus thought, well, you know, in these conditions, it's going to be impossible to score. Let's just play and get the draw. And that's a possibility.
Just finally, Carlo, very quickly before we let you go, there was obviously another cracking game on the weekend involving Napoli, we touched on slightly just then. And Walter Mazzarri's return with his Interside to Naples. A mixed reception. Were you surprised that there were a few boos kind of thrown in there with the applause that he received from his old fans?
A little bit of a shame, yeah, because I think he was important to the project. He was important to the Napoli project, building them up again after dark days of, you know, a decade or so ago when they were reformed and moved up the division. So that is a little bit of a shame. So I think he's done a lot for Napoli. I think it was the right move for Napoli to replace him with Rafa Benitez, and I really do honestly think that if they have a good transfer market, two good transfer markets in 2014, I really think they can win the Scudetto in 2014, 2015, because their key players are all in their mid-20s. The core of their team is young enough to be built around. And if they can just improve their defence and bring in a top centre midfielder, I really honestly think they can win the Scudetto next season. Not this year, but next year. I think there's a great chance.
It would be nice to see somebody else getting their hands on it after what looks like it's going to be 3 years of Juventus winning it, that's for sure. Carlo, mate, we really appreciate you taking the time out to join us here on WFD and take us through some of the main stories and talking points from Serie A. And if we don't catch up with you before the festive season really kicks in, have a very good Christmas, mate, and a very happy New Year as well.
Yeah, pleasure, Ollie, and have a great Christmas as well.
Cheers, mate. Thanks for joining us, man. Carlo Garganessi joining us here on World Football Daily, talking all things Italian football, a little bit of Serie A chat, and of course a Champions League draw from the Italian point of view. Only one team in it, and I will say it is the Rossoneri, of course, AC Milan, flying the flag for Italian nations, for the Italian nation and for Serie A in the Champions League, and of course Napoli with that draw against Swansea, and Juventus in the Europa League as well, dropping down. We'll talk about that in just a minute. Of course, Juventus, they take on Trabzonspor. Lazio obviously in there still, as well as our Fiorentina away at Edgeburg, and Ludogorets taking on Lazio as well. Plenty to talk about from the Europa League draw, but before we get into that, got to say again, big thanks there to Carlo for joining us here on WFD, chatting a little bit about the Italian football from last night and the weekend, and of course the Champions League and Europa League draw for the Italian clubs, and a bit around Europe as well. Rafa joining me as always, mate. We didn't look at the Europa League draw yesterday. We were kind of sidetracked by AVB, by Steve Clark, and of course by the Champions League draw. What did you make of the Europa League draw? There are some interesting ties in there. I mean, the one that stands out and that Carlo and myself were talking about, of course, Swansea-Napoli.
Yeah, I mean, that is the only one that really stands out to me. I mean, it's not watered down juice. There's just so many of them that I'm just not thoroughly impressed, I guess. I don't know, juice. I think I'm going to wait till the next round to really kind of dive back into the Europa League, because it's a little too dense right now.
Hard man to please. Not even Dynamo Kiev in their tie. I mean, you know, Dynamo Kiev Valencia, that's Champions League tie a few years ago.
Yeah, but Dynamo Kiev has not been what they used to be.
I suppose they don't have Shevchenko, Rebrov. You know, we can't hang on to those days forever, I guess.
And you know, a lot of people were kind of emailing me yesterday and texting me as well, saying that, oh, you know, I think it was also Jeff in Philly. Or maybe it was UVJ. I think it was UVJ, actually. Yes, it was, because he was talking about how, you know, it is kind of nice for Juventus to get Trabzonspor you know, after being dropped down from the Champions League. But he feels kind of bad for all these teams who've basically struggled and fought their way and clawed their way into to this point, essentially.
Well, I've got the email here from Jay, sent in before the draw yesterday. And he just said, here's one of the issues I have with the Champions League sides dropping down to the Europa League. Though Roma right now is happy that they do. The unseeded Champions League sides in the draw were Juventus, Ajax, Porto and Pilsen. There are sides that won their group who are looking at going on to take on these guys. What the hell? It seems like Genk, Salzburg, Ludogorets, Razgrad work their behinds off to win their group so they can get an easier draw, and they might get paired with Juve, Ajax or Porto. That's not right. However, only six of the sides that have dropped down from the Champions League since that became the policy in 1996-97 have gone on to win the competition. Almost double that number of winners actually started in the Europa League / UEFA Cup, which I guess is a good thing. Though it may just be a reflection on the fact that many teams that drop down don't care about the competition and field under strength squads. Either way, some of the teams who have been taking this competition seriously so far are going to get screwed over on Monday. That was Juve J telling us his thoughts on the Europa League Champions League dropout system. I don't know. I mean, Salzburg against Ajax, but there's still, you know, those sides that he mentions that have, you know, worked really hard to win their groups. You still, even without those kind of Juventus, Porto, that lot being in there, you don't rate them to go on and win the tournament, would you? I mean, surely you would look at like a Betis, a Valencia, you know, sides that are in it from the start, Lazio, Lyon, you know, these would be the guys that you'd think, well, when push comes to shove at the end of it, if those Champions League sides weren't there, these would be the sides that would probably go on and win it. Because it is stacked at the league system in favour of those big leagues, because they have so many more teams that go into Champions League and Europa League. It's bigger and better sides from those leagues going into this tournament, as opposed to, you know, the side from the back end of nowhere. So whether those teams dropped out of the Champions League or not, I still don't think a lot of those sides would have a chance of winning this tournament. I completely understand what Jay's saying, though, in terms of, you know, and we've said it on the show before, it does kind of suck for those sides that work their behinds off to get somewhere in this tournament. You know, they're coming from kind of little known places around the back end of Eastern Europe and stuff, and they battle and fight their way through to get into out of their groups and into the knockout stages, where, you know, anything can happen. Let's not forget that anything can happen in knockout football. But then they end up drawing somebody that's dropped out of the Champions League. But it also, the flip side of it is, it does give us some slightly more entertaining ties. I mean, I don't think you would be kind of crawling up the wall to watch Chronomo Moritz against Leon Raf, but when you then look at PAOK Thessaloniki against Benfica, two sides of Champions League caliber quality, that suddenly makes it a little more entertaining to watch. Similarly, Swansea Napoli, if that was Swansea against Trabzonspor, I don't think, Raf, you'd be getting down to a Thursday and going, you know what, I'm going to record that Swansea Trabzonspor game because I've been waiting to see this for a long time, this clash. Swansea Napoli, on the other hand, you might think about putting on your DVR and sitting down and having a watch.
Let me say this, Juice, that maybe, you know, obviously I was wrong. And I'll be the first to come out and admit anytime I'm wrong. Because, we're all human, Juice. I came out early and said that Juventus were going to win the Champions League, basically. Win it all outright. And obviously, I'm well wrong. But that does not mean I'm completely wrong. They could still potentially be champions of Europe in one way or another and go to Torino on home soil and win the Europa Cup final, which, I mean, it's not necessarily a bad thing. And again, it kind of proves me sort of right, right?
Well, no, because you didn't make you made a very clear distinction that it was the Champions League they win rather than being a European Cup winner.
Oh, they're going to be a European champion at the end of the year.
Yeah, you weren't vague enough to be able to get away with this claim, and I only wish your World Football Daily IKTS claims and scores were just as kind of as bad as your Champions League prediction this year. But unfortunately, you continue to remain second in our league, and however many points I try and claw back, it's just not happening right now. But do you see what I mean? I can understand why UEFA likes this, because it puts bigger sides back into the tournament. My question is, though, if they want bigger sides back into the tournament, why don't they reduce the Champions League number of teams in that and then and put those sides that wouldn't be in the Champions League into the Europa League instead, and make those teams from the be in it from the very beginning, rather than having, you know, a stacked Champions League lineup and then giving people a second chance when they drop out of that first competition.
I see your chance, or I see your opportunity, but I like the, like, to me personally, I like the way that the Europa League and the Champions League are essentially linked through the dropout kind of connection. And to be honest, you know, I understand your point, Juice, and I think that, you know, without the drop in kind of connection, you could make the argument that, you know, the Europa League will allow for other teams, some not so big teams, to really start kind of gaining momentum on a European scale, you know, on a grander scale, and potentially grow as clubs and also grow their leagues as well at the same time. But I like to see the kind of drop down. I like to see these.
You want the big sides to be given their second chance.
Right, and I also think that it makes that third spot place that much more interesting. It makes the group stages of the Champions League that much more interesting, because it's not just. I mean, we do know that, you know. Look, sometimes teams are playing for that third spot. Look, we don't want to drop out of Europe. We want to stay in one form or another, and we will do whatever it takes. And if that means having to go and play a champion or a Europa League, then we're there.
I guess I think a lot of those sides though. A lot of the sides that you get in that third place spot are either sides that didn't really have much ambition of getting through the Champions League anyway and almost kind of sign themselves to acceptance. And when it comes down to the last few days, you know, I don't really ever get the feeling in the last couple of games in the Champions League group stage that teams are really kind of scrapping over that third place. It never seems to be too important to me. And then when they do, you get a lot of the time, as Jay said, you know, they feel weak in lineups. They're not too fussed. They'd rather get back in the Champions League again by the league at the end of the season rather than sacrifice players for European glory. And only sides with, I think, depth like Chelsea can really, you know, make that push. You know, Swansea are going to struggle come the end of the season with all the extra games if they stay in this tournament, because they don't have the depth of a grand side like Chelsea to be able to kind of mount that attack on both fronts. And if Swansea are in with a chance of getting back into Europa League like that, or risking it all in knockout competition in the Europa League, they'll take the league any day, especially as the Premier League pays so much for, you know, how high up you finish in the Europa League. So, sorry, in the Premier League. So I think there still needs to be changes, although don't tell Graham Hunter I said that, because he would change nothing when it comes to European football right now. So I can't find myself arguing against Graham Hunter. That's one thing that you just don't do in football. So maybe we'll have to sideskirt this for the moment. Raf, we do have a semi-big game coming up this evening. Guangzhou Evergreen taking on Bayern Munich in the semi-finals of the World Club Cup.
Have you been watching any of this over the weekend, actually?
No, I haven't, actually. I missed the Monterrey game, and I missed the Guangzhou against Al Ahly. But tonight and tomorrow, we've got Bayern against Guangzhou, and we've got Raja Casablanca taking on Atletico Mineiro in the two semi-finals. I mean, are you do you get drawn into the Club World Cup at all, mate?
You know what? I actually have been, but only, I mean, only... And this might sound like regionally racist or something, and I'm not trying to come off that way, but I mean, I do kind of get pulled into this strictly from the European standpoint. I love to see what the European, you know, first things first, I like to see a European kind of heavyweight and a South American heavyweight go at it. I find that just incredibly interesting to see, like, the, you know, your South American club powerhouse taking on a European club powerhouse, and I also like the idea of seeing where our representatives, you know, kind of land you. I like to see that, you know, Monterrey, although they went out and played tough against this Casablanca side, who were actually pretty impressive. I looked at both sides and I saw a lot of MLS characteristics in this Casablanca side, and it made me excited kind of a little bit, because I felt like on any given day, you know, we could have taken it to Casablanca. We probably could have taken it and progressed at some point. I think Monterrey generally maybe 7 to 8 times out of 10 would have taken that game against Casablanca. But that's where I get into this game. That's where I get into this competition. I don't know very much about your African clubs. I don't know much about your Asian clubs either. So I learn a lot about these clubs through this competition, and it slowly kind of opens up my horizons. And if that's kind of like the starting point for me, I think that's perfectly okay.
I guess so. I don't get dragged into it, to be honest, Raf, I have to say. Last year, more of it was about watching, you know, would Chelsea be able to do anything in it? And I caught the semi-final. I didn't actually watch the full game of the final. I only caught the highlights. And it's something that has always seemed still a little, you know, gimmicky to me. You know, it just seems like another way for FIFA to grind out television money and stuff.
But you have to, would you just rather cut it off and not have this competition? Do you not like the idea of?
It seems a little bit unnecessary, to be honest, doesn't it? I mean, look, we
disagree. I like the idea of having your regional competitions, much like in the World Cup, and this is what it is. It's a club World Cup. You compete throughout your season, essentially in your kind of extended tournament, in your regional club tournament. And the best of the best, which this is supposed to be, this is the best of the best, meet and challenge each other. And it really is a showcase for regional, not regional, but yeah, I guess kind of flair and tactics and style. There's a stark difference between, you know, the way that a European side will set up and play a match or a final against your South American sides. Because let's be honest, that's really what kind of comes down to. It's usually a European side or a South American side. And it's really interesting to see these kind of teams go at it and see how they deal with it. It's also interesting to kind of be introduced to a new location. I really dig it.
Why not cut out the middleman though, and then we'll just arrange a two-leg final between the winners of the Copa Libertadores and the winners of the Champions League, and cut out the kind of Asia Cup and stuff like that. Because 90% of the time, that's what it is. Comes down to Copa Lib against Champions League wins.
Your point is taken, but you have to play the games because ultimately, those games aren't sealed and, you know, they're not a done deal. I would have looked at Monterrey Casablanca and said, Monterrey are going to go through. But, and again, I'll also say that, you know, 7 to 8 times out of 10, they will go through against a Casablanca side. But, that's why you have to play the games. And I think that, you know, anytime an African side, anytime an Asian side, anytime, a CONCACAF side, gets a win, progresses to the next round, it's big for them. It is huge.
I see what you're saying, man. I just, you know, when we get to a time like this, when we've just wrapped up kind of Champions League group stages and Europa League group stages, and we've got the draw for that, we've had the draw for the Europa League, we've got FA Cup third round starting, we've obviously got Copa del Rey kind of is starting to get a bit more kind of underway as we go deeper into that. Coupe de France, the Bundesliga is obviously about to go on its month-long break, and we do have a little stopgap with that. But we're getting into this Christmas time where it's already really busy, especially for Premier League football fans, teams. And I think that, you know, throwing in a tournament like this now especially is just, you know, to me it seems a bit much. A smarter place would be to put it in the end of the season when it's not a World Cup or European Championships year. That would make a little more sense, you know, the European season's finish and we can all, especially now so many seasons in South America are starting to operate more and more on a European type timescale. You know, then you throw it in at the end of that season, and it's like a bit of fun. Rather than putting it now in the middle of the season, yes, you've got the winter break, but if anybody picks up a knock or anything like that, it's going to be really damaging. I mean, it'd be damaging either way, whichever time you did it. And I just think now is not the right time to do it, and I think it's a bit unnecessary the number of games you've played. I mean, it only affects a few teams, and obviously only one team from Europe, one team from South America and stuff. But it's still, you know, it still could end up with disastrous situations should something go wrong. And I also don't think it's really treated with too much respect by the European clubs that kind of go there, the South American clubs that go there. And it's obviously seems to be treated and revered a little bit more by the Asia Cup winners, you know, the African club side winners and whatnot. Enough's enough for me, Raf. I don't need it right now. I've got other things on my plate. I don't want to have to worry about the Club World Cup.
I can see that, Juice. I understand where you're coming from. It's a bit much, and I think the timing is kind of tough. Although I can't, I mean, I guess maybe if it was more towards like the end of the season as kind of like an add-on to whatever you got going, assuming that all clubs are kind of, or all leagues and stuff and regions and all that good stuff are kind of on the same timeline. It does seem like maybe if it was more towards like the end of the season, that would be a little bit easier to kind of swallow and follow and kind of,
well, you look at like the Confederations Cup, for instance. I really got into that because, you know, it's not during the season or anything like that. It was, you know, it gave us a hit of football in a normally kind of quite barren time. And I think if it was done at that kind of time again, if the Club World Cup was done at that time, it would have a similar effect. It would seem more iconic because you wouldn't have the distractions of other football going around on at that point. Instead, it would be, look, we're gonna dedicate, you know, a week or two to this tournament to make it a little bit bigger. I think that would be far more beneficial. And not in the build-up to Christmas as well, because without, you know, in non-football sense as well, this time of year, for us and for so many people, obviously of all faiths, nationalities, do have kind of holiday seasons at this time. So, you know, a lot of people are kind of thinking more about what's going on in terms of, you know, family, friends, what they're doing, this kind of time of year, and of course everybody gets wrapped up in that and isn't going to be paying much attention to a tournament that most European and South American sides don't really pay much attention to anyway.
Question before we kind of move on to anything else, what if it was kind of a little bit more sporadic, like put on, considering it is a quote unquote World Cup, what if it was, you know, maybe put out a little more like, you know,
every 2 years, and you take the two winners of the Champions League, the two winners of the Copa Lib, and the two winners of all the other tournaments, and then they all have to, and then they all play in the tournament.
Mm-hmm.
That would work because you'd have more games, more good sides, and you'd have a bit more kind of competition as well, because you might get a semi final where you've got, you know, Copa Lib against Copa Lib and Champions League against Champions League. So you get two great games potentially with a European and South American rivalry, and then you get a big final with the rivalry, of course, of the Copa Lib v Champions League winners. Which, yeah, that could work. That would make me stand up and pay a little more attention to it. It's just because there's so few sides in it, it doesn't seem worthwhile making a big deal about it right now. You know, it's here and then it's suddenly gone.
Sure, I get that. Yeah, I get that, man. Again, I'm kind of getting more and more into it. I think maybe a couple more years or a couple years ago, 5 years ago, I was kind of, this was a trivial competition to me, and I wasn't so taken by it. But being in the sport, I think I am growing to it. And also being from the United States, for me, this is the pinnacle of where, you know, soccer can be reached for a club competition. You know, our CONCACAF Champions League, it really is just a ticket to this competition for me at this point, in CONCACAF. I can appreciate, you know, the CONCACAF Champions League, but it's not the, you know, the Europa UEFA Champions League. So we just don't get into it like in Europe. So, it's just not the same. So I see it as like the kind of next step or you know, the really where you want to go when you win the Champions League here in CONCACAF.
I can see where you're coming with that, mate. I see where you're coming with that. Well, let's move it away from that, because there's something I want to talk to you about, which is slightly off topic. And we were talking about the AC Milan Roma game earlier on with Carlo, and of course Milan probably quite happy to come away from that with a point after being under a lot of pressure from a Roma side that continues to impress, but maybe isn't being aggressive enough in their play at the moment, looking to continue that streak of, you know, not losing so far this season. And actually, if they maybe let loose a little bit more rather than trying to just defend this unbeaten streak, then maybe it might give them a little more chance of getting these 3 points on the road and in these difficult games at the moment, as they have been doing, racking up the draws in the last few weeks. But did you see what Mario Balotelli was sporting last night?
No, I didn't. How did I miss this? I actually watched this game.
Mario Balotelli, his boots yesterday were basically designed and made up of newspaper headlines about his career in Italy with AC Milan. I think this, of all the customized boots we've seen, you know, we see Messi's getting different colors of those new F50s every other week and his special Ballon d'Or boots and stuff. But these white boots and just in faded gray were newspaper headlines from his time at AC Milan so far. I think this, that is, they looked really nice as well, because you don't notice it from a distance, and then close up, you kind of like, oh, that is writing and that's like pictures of him and that's paper headlines and stuff. Very cool indeed. I just wondered if you've seen anything that's more egotistical than that, really, on a football pitch, ref?
No, the first time I saw, like, the gold boots kind of thing, and it wasn't even, like, in soccer, too. This was, like, the first time I saw Michael Johnson, the famous American track runner, you know, sporting the gold kind of cleats after he won gold in the Olympics. You know, I thought that was a bit much. This, I'm looking at the boots now, Juice. I personally really dig these. I mean, I can't hate on these. Like you said, I think they're a little bit, they're very stylish, man. So is it egotistical? Yes.
Do we expect it's so egotistical.
Yeah, do we expect anything, you know, less from Mario? No, this is what we come to expect from him. So, yeah, I mean, it would have been, I think his next boots will probably be, you know, not just headlines, you know, in text, but actual images, you know, like this will be, you know, his image of like an exploding firecracker, or him dressed up as Santa giving out money, you know, to people around Manchester, that sort of thing. And then that would be wicked cool too, man. Again, it's also very interesting just to see how far, you know, boot technology and style and fashion has come.
Yeah, well, they can pretty much do anything they want now, from the looks of it, with Mario Balotelli sporting those custom-made boots last night. Tell you what, man, I wish I could have a pair of boots that would look that good and fitted that nicely at the moment. I
wish I had a pair of boots that had all my headlines from
mine would probably be plain white. If I tried to put any headlines that I've made on, I suppose I could use, like, you know, story headlines that I've written and stuff like that. I could put them on. That'd be quite interesting. But no, I don't have any newspaper headlines about myself personally. Not yet, anyway, but maybe one day, Raf. Maybe one day. Did I tell you I think I might have broken my foot actually playing football last night, Raf?
Look, this is kind of worrying because, you know, I got a text message from you yesterday, and that, you know, that was a little bit personal, but. My wife basically kind of talks to me. I get home from work, and me and my wife are talking. She goes, "Hey, what the hell is going on with Juice?" And I was like, "Well, what do you mean?" You know. And she goes, "Well, he's basically kind of whining around around Facebook, talking about a broken foot and all this other stuff going."
Whining around? That's so mean. Put one thing up about it.
He's like, "You know, what happened? What'd you do to him?" And I was like, "Well, I didn't do shit to him." You know?
yeah, I'd have been impressed if you'd been able to break my foot from all the way over there. On the other side of the globe. Yeah, no, that would have been good. No, I had some, like, bum news about some work and stuff. That was, as I say, that was a bit of a knockback. But you know what? I was like, it's all good. We got Monday football. Going to go down and just get it all out of the system, play a good game of football, you know, have a laugh, not think about stuff. And started playing, and about 5 minutes in, you know, just an inadvertent kind of tangle of feet, and my friend, like, ends up treading on my foot quite hard. And I'm like, that hurts, but seems okay. I'm still able to run and stuff, and just kind of try running it off. And gets to the end of the game. I mean, you know, it's like 50 minutes of running around still on this foot. And I stopped using it to pass or anything like that because it was hurting to kind of control the ball. So I'm mainly right footed anyway, and luckily trod on my left foot. But I'm competent enough to be able to deliver a pass on my left boot still, ref. So the fact that I couldn't do that meant I changes your playing style. If you're only playing with one foot, you know, you feel like you're Gareth Bale, just never using that right leg. You feel like I am Robin, except without the speed of either of those two, or the touch, or the quality of in front of goal. And finished, walked off the pitch, and was like, you know, really want to get out of these boots because they're quite a tight fit, but it's really hurting my left foot, really hurting. So I changed into my boots, took the boots off, changed into my trainers, and started walking home. It's only like a 5-minute walk home. And I by the end of the walk home, I can't walk on my foot. You know, the kind of the adrenaline levels from like running around and playing and stuff has all dropped out. And, you know, you're starting to come back down to normal and feeling a bit tired and whatever. It's a Monday night, you know, long weekend of work. And the last thing you need is to be in a lot of pain. And I get home and I'm like, this really hurts. You know, I can barely walk up the stairs without like putting weight on it. So I have to use like the banisters to pull me up and whatnot. And, I take the shoe off and then take the sock off. And just on the very top of my foot, there's just a really nice round black bruise. Like it's already gone black. It's pretty disgusting. And also on my right toe, underneath the toenail, has also gone black from bruising. So I've been caught on the toe and on the top of the foot. And kind of all last night, had to sleep with my foot outside the duvet because it was in pain so much. I couldn't get to sleep till like 2 o'clock in the morning. It was just horrible, man. It really. And today I've still been hobbling about. You know, the bruising's gone slightly green now, which is nice. You know, my foot looks like it could be needing like amputation right about now. I haven't gone to the hospital yet because I don't really see the point because they don't put they don't strap a foot up already or anything like that. All they'll say is, you know, don't put pressure on it, don't walk on it. If it was the ankle or something, then yeah. Because, you know, you need to get that in a cast or whatever to stop it moving about. But a foot, you know, you just got to take as much pressure and weight off it as you can. So I've got like a walking stick at home and stuff. So if I need to go anywhere, I'll kind of use that. I'll look like a 90-year-old man, especially with my hairline. But, you know, I'll still be able to get about. So I've been trying not to use that too much. But also last night, you know, about 10 minutes from time, I make a kind of a quick change of direction and just feel I've got a bit of a dodgy lower back anyway, mate, and just feel the back go as well. And this morning I've woken up and like the back is definitely a lot worse than yesterday. The foot's green. I was just so that's what that was about. I'm really cheesed off, man. But I played football for about 50 minutes or so on a potentially broken foot, so you know, players go down too easy, in my opinion, Raph. Need to be more like me. Play through that pain and, you know, do it to get the result. Although we did end up losing as well last night.
You ended up losing?
Yeah, it just didn't make any of it worth it at all.
It makes it worse, yeah. Look, I'm the same way, Juice. You remember, like, I think it was over a month ago now, but when I first started playing with Gio again, my first game back, I got basically cleated, you know, studs up kind of on the inside part of my left foot. And much like yourself, you know, I think I only had 15, 20 minutes left in the second half to play through. And I just kind of like, you know, I tried to run it off, you know, and you could kind of, you know, keep a jog, basically. Your foot's kind of tied up in that boot. It's nice and tight and secure. Pressure, obviously, is a bit sensitive. But, you know, like you said, you just try to avoid kicking with it if you can. I even took off my boot after the game and I saw a little bit of bruising kind of coming. Obviously there was a really big red, like, you know, kind of mark where the actual cleat dug in. But as like the day progressed, you know, I managed to get home. No problem. I was still kind of, I was limping, but it was more of like it's a bit sore. But by like, you know, the game ended at like 11 by 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock. I was in so much pain, Juice, that I couldn't even walk and stand on it. And I literally, you know, put my foot up on the couch and was just assed out for the rest of the day. Like you, I had to kind of like, I had trouble sleeping because I couldn't find a comfortable position to like, you know, keep my foot in. And then the next day I had a really tough time walking around. You know, I went to work and I looked like a gimp, just kind of hobbling about. By the Tuesday, I was walking a lot smoother, and by Wednesday I was pretty much good. It definitely still hurt, any kind of pressure on the foot, but it wasn't broken. And like you, you know, unless it's, you know, definitively broken, and I think you can kind of tell most of the time when it's really, 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 really broken, or if it's like a bone that needs to be kind of cast up or something like that. What else are you gonna do? Like for example, I'm pretty sure I broke a rib. Yeah, I just kind of, you know, I sucked it up through some dirt.
You're not going to get like an air vacuum treatment thing or anything like that that, like, you know, pro athletes get or anything like that. All they're going to do is just say, oh, right, yeah, just go and rest it. So I might as well just start resting it by not going to the hospital in the first place. I mean, that's a great way to start the resting process. So,
The only thing you could benefit from is if you're, you know, if you're really lucky, you get some really good drugs, Juice. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, you maybe get some, like, codeine or something like that. But that I don't like that. I don't like being all, like, spaced out. I like being a little bit switched on and being able to... I mean, it'd be terrible if I came on here. It was just like, and like drooling onto the microphone or something.
It's going to be the first time. There's been the occasional, you know, day when you come off of, like, you know, two matches that you've done through the middle of the night.
Yeah, or a six-game drinking bender as well. No. I'm always sober when we do World Football Daily. I actually generally, I've never had a beer even during the show, man. I remember one time seeing, I think, on Champions...
Sure, that's a lie that you were actually here in studio here in Southern California, and I'm pretty sure we had alcohol.
No, we never did. We went for a beer after one of the shows to watch the Champions League Chelsea Barca game, but we never had beers in the studio. But I do remember seeing Martin with a Corona during a Champions League draw special that you guys did. And he was sat down in the chair with a beer still.
Maybe like the day of the Champions League let's do the day of the Champions League, because if it's the day after, you know, people might want some legitimate discussion about it. But the day of, I think it's all fair.
Yeah, join us on the day of the Champions League then this year for a couple of beers here on World Football Daily. Remember to keep emailing the show as well. Show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter. 310-909-8483 is the rant line. And, of course, there's the Facebook page as well. We read out Geo's today. We had a few more come into the mailbox, which we'll try and get through later on this week as we continue, including Anthony Grubic and his tales from PSG. We will get that in at some point this week, Anthony. A big thanks for sending us the details of what your trip to go and see PSG was like. We will read it out later. Remember, show at worldfootballdaily.com, at WFootballDaily on Twitter are the best ways to get in contact with us, and keep the tweets coming in as well. Champions League draw, Europa League draw are done. They're dusted. Put them in the books, schedule the dates, and maybe even arrange some flights. We're getting into the tired Christmas period where most of the European leagues will be shutting down, but the football will continue here on World Football Daily right through the festive season. Continue with us tomorrow this week. We will be back at the same time as normal on Wednesday. Until then, though, enjoy the football that you can find. Get into the World Club Cup like Rafa if you can, or get into hospital and get a foot checked out if you can, like myself. Have a very good Tuesday. We will see you at the same time tomorrow on Wednesday. Have a good week.